I'm Kelly McCarthy from WRCV Channel 3 News. I'm here now with Rick Tyler, congressional candidate. Rick Tyler is the man behind the Make America White Again campaigns.
When I designed the Make America White Again billboard, it was specifically to engender in people's minds a thought process that would take them back to, let's say, the 1960s. I call it the Leave It to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet, Mayberry America. And some might call it the Norman Rockwell America. I and many, many, many millions of others believe that that was a better America. We believe that it was an America where you didn't have to lock your doors, you didn't have to worry about carjackings and home invasions, you didn't have to worry about Muslim sleeper cells down the street, you didn't have to worry about Islamic mosques radicalizing people. It was an America that was far superior to the America that we live in today, and not coincidentally, it was an America whose demographic was 85% plus Caucasian.
There it is, 85% Caucasian. That's the real problem. The problem in America is that there's not enough Caucasians, and there's too many of these browns and all the rest, and this is the America that we live in right now. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin, episode number 215. I'm so happy to be here just because I'm with you, but obviously I don't bring the greatest of news this week. So we were off last week, and I was considering taking the entire month of August off. Reason being is because August is by far and away the hottest month ever for weddings. It's the temperature hot, obviously. There's a lot of sun. And, of course, with it being the end of summer, a lot of people really want to get those weddings in right now. So I'm generally minimum two, some weeks three weddings in a weekend, and it's insane. It's tough to keep that up and keep this up. So I was going to go full-blown next month. But it hit me while I was planning this week, and I wasn't sure I was going to put out a show. But while I was planning all of the things that I set aside for today's show, all the writing and all the research and all the articles and all this other stuff, I just had to throw it out. I might bring it to you another week, but I don't get to bring it to you this week because there's a whole bunch of things that are going on that are a lot more topical. With this show, we try to be historical. We try to make these shows to where you can listen to them anytime, any point in history, and they'll still be relevant. And so what I'm bringing to you today, later on in the hour, is I'm bringing you an old show. Now, that sounds insane to say, but here on this show, we have been talking about the growing white supremacist movement for some time, and I don't know why. The Southern Poverty Law Center is going after Majid Nawaz right now, but refuses to label the Republican Party a hate group. For those of you that don't know, Majid Nawaz, who is head of the Quilliam Institute, which is an anti-Muslim extremist institute, Majid himself used to be an extremist and is taking what he learned during his time being embedded with extremists in order to de-extreme Islam, if that makes sense. But the work that he does it enrages the folks, the good folks, by the way, at the Southern Poverty Law Center, because they see him as anti-Islam, and he's not. He knows his stuff. And we should be listening to him. I read his book, Radical, and it was one of the best books I've ever read. It's one of those ones, I read through it, I highlighted it, it sits on my bookshelf, and I will never get rid of it. I will die with it, because I refer back to it all the time. He's brilliant. So the Southern Poverty Law Center goes after him for being anti-Islam. But right now, with what's going on in America, with all the white supremacy, all these rallies and Nazis and blah, blah, the Southern Poverty Law Center still refuses to label the United States Republican Party as a hate group. I don't understand it, but the good folks at the Southern Poverty Law Center are definitely going to hear from Melvin. But the first thing I want to get into, the very, very first thing. So the president sat down for a press conference this week, and I found myself barking at the radio when I heard it. I'm no different than the rest of my red-blooded Americans. I hear dumb things, and I respond to them even though they can't hear me. When my team is on television losing, I am very much yelling at them on the screen. But I said, wait a minute. why am I doing this? I mean, it doesn't do any good. First of all, nobody's listening. You know, second of all, Dum Dum definitely isn't listening to what I'm saying. And I go, well, I used to work for KXOY in Spokane. And I had this brilliant idea, what I thought was a brilliant idea. And I mentioned it, I likely mentioned it in jest to my program director. His name was Pat at that time. I'm not sure if he's the program director over there anymore. But they carried Sean Hannity. And my program director, he himself was a progressive, but he ran a conservative station because that's all there is, are conservative stations. And he liked working in radio and he wanted to be a program director. And so there you go. So he was. And I said to him, you know, we put Hannity on for 3 hours a day. He says six, because we were contractually obligated to run Hannity in the evening also. So a 24-hour cycle on AM 920 KXOY meant that 6 hours of that, okay, were Hannity, Sean Hannity. So there were 18 non-Hannity-related hours and then six Hannity-only hours. And I said, you know what would be great is if somebody came on after Hannity and just did a fact check, you know, listen to the whole 3 hours of the show, fact-checking the show. And then you could put someone on for an hour afterwards to just kick a hole in every dumb thing that Sean Hannity said. Obviously, no one likes that idea. KXOY had a lot of conservatives at it, not just in the radio station itself, but also at KXOY4. I remember working in that newsroom, and Bush was president at that time. And I remember the absolute adulation for Bush. And I remember seeing all the red state maps on people's computers as screensavers. And everybody was a conservative. Just about everybody was a conservative at that station. It didn't make me crazy, but I did learn a lot. And I did have to listen to conservatives a lot. So with that idea, you know, being, no, we can't do that, Melvin. First of all, they don't want us doing that. We carry Sean Hannity because Sean Hannity's supposedly telling the truth. You know, it's Hannity's truth for America. And I said, you know what? I think I would like to do that just the same. You know, no one's liked my idea over all the years. But when the president was giving his press conference this week, I said, aha, Melvin, now is your time.
We discussed many things. One of them, obviously, was North Korea. We discussed Venezuela. We discussed Afghanistan and the Middle East generally. We had some very good meetings, some very good ideas, very good thoughts, and a lot of decisions were made. This was a very important day, actually. Made a lot of decisions. With that, if you have any questions, yes?
Make any decision on Afghanistan whether to add additional...
Yeah, we're getting close. We're getting very close. It's a very big decision for me. I took over a mess, and we're going to make it a lot less messy. But that has been a place, 17 years, our longest wars, I read in one of your columns. And frankly, it's going to be a decision that's going to be made very soon.
And you have full confidence in your national security advisor?
Yes, I do. General McMaster? Yes. Absolutely. He's our friend. He's my friend. And he's a very talented man. I like him and I respect him.
So here's what we need to know about Afghanistan. So yeah, Afghanistan is at this point our longest war. And it's interesting to hear him be able to get away with criticizing that war. For most Americans, that's a forgotten war right now. And so do you have confidence in McMaster? Yes, he's got confidence in McMaster. But the general that is in charge in Afghanistan is General John Nicholson. For those of you that know me on a personal level, you know why that name is effing crazy to me. And here's what I've been trying to know. So the war in Afghanistan is not going well. And it has not been going well for some time. We never had a clear objective in Afghanistan. And now we've got this absolute mess on our hands. And of course, this dum-dum's not going to find his way out of it because he's a reality TV star. He's an expert in nothing, and he's not great at making deals. So because things are going so terribly in Afghanistan, he wants to blame somebody. Gotta blame somebody. Right? Don't blame the people that started it. And you definitely can't blame the people that are fighting it because they weren't given a clear objective. So he's going after General John Nicholson, and he wants to fire General John Nicholson. And my God, he hates John Nicholson.
Sir, why did you decide to announce the transgender ban reversal a couple of weeks ago? And are you betraying a community that you pledged to support?
No, look, I have great respect for the community. I think I have great support, or I've had great support from that community. I got a lot of votes. But the transgender, the military is working on it now. They're doing the work. It's been a very difficult situation. And I think I'm doing a lot of people a favor by coming out and just saying it. As you know, it's been a very complicated issue for the military. It's been a very confusing issue for the military. And I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
The transgender ban. So here's what we learned about the transgender ban. He said, we're going to ban transgender people because it's going to save us so much effing money, right? And we figure the health care for just the transgender people in the military is somewhere between $6 and $8 million. But to implement his transgender ban is going to cost, I think, in the neighborhood of $800 million. So almost $1 billion, which you're clearly not saving anybody any money. And yes, there were a gigantic number of gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual folks that supported this guy because he said that he was going to stand up for them. And I have yet to hear any of those folks express any regret. You can't vote for the current iteration of the United States Republican Party if you're gay. If you're black, if you're Mexican, you can't, because they're not going to stand up for you. They don't like you. They have to adhere to their base, and their base is full of hate.
Do you have any response to the Russian president expelling 755 workers from our embassy?
No, I want to thank him because we're trying to cut down on payroll. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm very thankful that he let go of a large number of people because now we have a smaller payroll. There's no real reason for them to go back. So I greatly appreciate the fact that they've been able to cut our payroll for the United States. We'll save a lot of money.
What you just heard was the president of the United States thanking a foreign leader for kicking our diplomats out of their country. And he says the reason it's okay is because it's going to save us a lot of money. They kicked our diplomats out of their country, and the president says that's great. That's going to save us a lot of money. Of course, our diplomats were kicked out of the country in response to the new Russia sanctions. And this guy, who's got Putin's hand so far up his backside, I can't tell where one ends and the other begins, just thanked a foreign leader for kicking our diplomats out of their country.
Was it appropriate for the FBI to raid the home of Paul Manafort pre-dawn? And
I thought it was a very, very strong signal or whatever. I know Mr. Manafort, I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but I know him. He was with the campaign, as you know, for a very short period of time, relatively short period of time. But I've always known him to be a good man. I thought it was a very, they do that very seldom. So I was surprised to see it. I was very, very surprised to see it. We haven't really been involved. Excuse me?
Have you spoken to the FBI director about it?
No, I have not. I have not. But to do that early in the morning, whether or not it was appropriate, you'd have to ask them. I've always found Paul Manafort to be a very decent man. And he's like a lot of other people, probably makes consultant fees from all over the place. Who knows? I don't know. But I thought that was a very, that was pretty tough stuff.
Mr. President,
to wake him up, perhaps his family was there. I think that's pretty tough stuff.
Paul Manafort had his door kicked in the middle of the night by the FBI, after he testified to Congress, which means they essentially have something on him. And here is the president distancing himself from Paul Manafort. Not a big deal. He was barely with the campaign. I don't even know that guy. Why would you do that to his family? What's happening right now with North Korea? And we'll get into that a little bit more next week. But with North Korea, we got an intelligence report that said that from, and this is from one of our agencies. We've got multiple agencies. One agency said the same thing that they said 4 years ago when General Flynn was in charge of that agency. And the same thing they said back in 2003 in the run-up to the Iraq War, that such and such country has nuclear weapons. All right, they got weapons, and they're small enough now to fit on the tip of a missile, and they can reach us. And when this was said, about four and a half years ago, and Obama was president, they said, well, that's one agency, and we're not going to do anything about it, because that's not enough. And it turned out to be wrong. Well, in North Korea, that guy, Kim Jong-un, deals in bluster, if nothing else. And so he decided to test the new guy. And now the new guy is trying to get us into a war. It's so strange to me how easy it is for folks to start wars when they know that they and their kids are not going to be killed. It's just other people's kids. But here's the thing. It's not likely that Kim Jong-un has the weapons. It's not likely that they're small enough to fit on the tip of a missile. It's not likely that they can go, because they have to go up in the air and then they got to come back down. So they have to survive re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. None of this stuff is likely. I'm pretty sure he's just testing Dum-Dum. And Dum-Dum's taking the bait. But why is he taking the bait? I think he's taking it for this reason. He wants to sound tough. He wants to sound alpha. He wants to pound his chest. And he wants people to look at him like he's a strong leader. But it has absolutely nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with this Russia case. Now that a grand jury has been seated for Robert Mueller, and now that they've kicked in Paul Manafort's door, the walls are closing in on one Donald Trump. And understand this also. So in the world, we've got all these bilateral agreements between countries. Post-World War II, we have all these different countries. It's not just us. It's a lot of different countries. This country's got one with this country, and this country's got one with this country. And here's the way the bilateral agreements work. If your country is attacked, we will come to your aid. If our country's attacked, you come to our aid. And then one of those countries might make a deal with another country. Hey, we'll make the same deal with you. And so there's all of these interlocking bilateral agreements. And so the idea was, someone attacks you, I help you, we end that conflict. But with so many interlocking agreements, what it does is it sets up a domino effect. And I think we're realizing that now, that we're potentially going into another war. So North Korea has a bilateral, or Korea, North Korea has a bilateral agreement with China. So China said, North Korea, if you attack America, right, if you bomb Guam like they're talking about doing, if you attack America, and this is China, they said, you are on your own. We are not going to help you. Breaking the agreement. Good news. That's good news for us. But then what did they say to us? China turns to America and says, but America, if you attack North Korea first, if you engage in what is known as first strike, we will be at war with you. 100% we would lose in a war with China. There's no two ways about it. They make our cars, they make our computers, they make our clothes, they make our shoes. We get a lot of our food from there. Even a lot of the smart chips that we use in our military weapons of war are made in China. They would simply kneecap us, and then they could invade us. And I understand that Cletus and all the boys on the ranch with their dang gum guns and the Confederate flags, they're just going to defend America. That's a fantasy, and that's not what's going to happen. China has 1 billion people, 1 billion, about triple what America has. And they've got us by the short hairs because they manufacture everything that we need, everything that makes our lives possible. And that's one of the things that I'm sure we didn't think about when we decided to hand our entire existence over to China. And so that's what we're looking at right now.
How would you categorize your relationship currently with Attorney General Sessions? Have you guys spoken about some of the differences you've had in the past?
It's fine. It is what it is. It's fine. He's working hard on the border. I'm very proud of what we've done on the border. I'm very proud of General Kelly, what he's done on the border. One of the reasons he's my chief of staff right now is because he did such an outstanding job at the border. We're down 78%. Nobody thought that would be. I mean, in the old days with other administrations, if you were down 1%, that was considered a big thing. We're down 78% at the border, and nobody thought that was possible. So I'm very proud of General Kelly. He's now chief of staff. At the same time, I'm very proud of what we've done over the last 6 months between Supreme Court, between tremendous amounts of legislation that's been passed. You know, we had 42 to 48 bills passed. I'm not talking about just executive orders. I'm talking about bills passed. We had massive executive orders. We got rid of record-setting amounts of regulations. And a lot of it is statutory, where it's a 90-day period, then you have to wait, then it's another 90-day period, you have to wait 30 days. Much more is coming out. And I believe in regulation. You have to have some regulation, but we're going to have a small percentage of regulation compared to what we have. And I think that's why you see business enthusiasm is the highest it's been in 18 years, why unemployment is the lowest it's been in 18 years. I mean, the unemployment rate just came out. It's the lowest it's been in 18 years.
Okay, first of all, that's a lie. It is not down 78%. Here in America, we have net negative immigration, which means that more people are leaving than are coming in. And that particular thing actually predates him becoming president. And then we're 78% on the border. That's a lie. Let's talk about the massive amount of legislation that has been passed. This president has gotten very little actually passed. Regulations. Regulations are consumer protections. And yes, they're getting quite a few of those lifted. Dirty water, dirty air, and he says, and businesses are excited again. They're so excited because they get to play in a game that no longer has any rules. And then the unemployment rate. That's been going down for 8 years. Once your plan kicks in, sir, there will be a reverse trend.
And with that being said, we have companies moving into the United States, whether it's Foxconn. You saw the two large auto companies moving back. Probably they'll go to Michigan, but they're negotiating with various states.
Let's talk about Foxconn. Foxconn is moving into Wisconsin. And Wisconsin gunned for that business. Foxconn makes a lot of stuff, electronics, but they make a lot of Apple stuff. And so the thing with Foxconn is they're a Chinese company. They're a Chinese company. They're going to come into America and they're going to get very low wages, non-union, very low wages, you know, low working conditions. They've got terrible working conditions. Foxconn is the one in China that had to, because they have a gigantic complex where people live and work. They had to put in an anti-suicide net to catch all of the people that were jumping to their deaths at the factory because of poor wages and poor working conditions. Now, thanks to low regulations, they have come to America, specifically Wisconsin. And they're going to come here and they're going to exploit our workers. And then they're going to make a gutload of money, and then they're going to send that money back to China.
We have done a lot in a short period of time, so I'm very proud of it. I think that General Kelly is going to be a fantastic chief of staff, however.
Mr. President, are you going to increase the U.S. military presence in Asia?
We are going to look at what's happening in Asia. We're looking at it right now. We're constantly looking at it. I don't like to signal what I'm going to be doing, but we are certainly looking at it. And obviously, we're spending a lot of time looking at, in particular, North Korea. And we are preparing for many different alternative events at North Korea. He has disrespected our country greatly. He has said things that are horrific. And with me, he's not getting away with it. He got away with it for a long time between him and his family. He's not getting away with it. It's a whole new ball game. And he's not going to be saying those things, and he's certainly not going to be doing those things. I read about we're in Guam by August 15th. Let's see what he does with Guam. He does something in Guam, it will be an event the likes of which nobody's seen before, what will happen in North Korea.
And when you say that, what do you mean?
You'll see. You'll see. And he'll see.
And that's the kind of rhetoric that I'm talking about. That's the danger. That kind of thing. He's going to see. We'll have to see. The likes that the world has never seen. That's the kind of thing that's going to get everybody killed.
It's not a dare. It's a statement. Has nothing to do with dare. That's a statement. He's not going to go around threatening Guam, and he's not going to threaten the United States, and he's not going to threaten Japan, and he's not going to threaten South Korea. No, that's not a dare, as you say. That is a statement of fact.
Notice how much he really stressed right there. It's not a dare. Not a dare. It is not a dare. I am not daring him. It's not a dare. He really, really drove that point home so as to not be blamed for an attack. Hey, I didn't dare him. He just attacked us. He really stressed, it's not a dare. Not a dare. You said dare. I didn't say dare. Who said dare? No one said dare. I didn't say dare. I'm not daring him to do it. Already trying to shirk the responsibility that comes with making those kinds of comments.
And he's not going to threaten South Korea. No, that's not a dare, as you say. That is a statement of fact.
Mr. President, can you talk about the nuclear posture and what your priorities are there?
Yeah, nuclear to me, number one, I would like to denuke the world. I know that President Obama said global warming is the biggest threat. I totally disagree. I say that it's a simple one. Nuclear is our greatest threat worldwide. Not even a question, not even close. So I'd like to denuke the world. I would like Russia and the United States and China and Pakistan and many other countries that have nuclear weapons get rid of them. But until such time as they do, we will be the most powerful nuclear nation on Earth by far. The first order I gave to my generals, as you know, Mike, my first order was I want this, our nuclear arsenal, to be the biggest and the finest in the world. And we spent a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort. And it's in tip-top shape and getting better and getting stronger. And until such time as this scourge disappears, we will be so much better and so much stronger than anybody else. And nobody, including North Korea, is going to be threatening us with anything.
What you just heard there was a true statement. He didn't make a lot of them, but he did in this case. Yes, nuclear is probably the biggest threat to the world. We had a thing during the Cold War. We said we're not going to have nuclear winter because we have what we refer to as mutually assured destruction. I have weapons of mass destruction. You have weapons of mass destruction. You bomb us. We bomb you. Whole world dead. Mutually assured destruction. So yeah, it's a threat. The fact that we even have these weapons is a threat. He doesn't think global warming's real. That's fine. He's not very bright. But he did point out the very true statement that the nuclear weapons are an absolute threat to the world. They're massively. And so he says, I would like to see a world without nukes. Next breath. But as long as there's nukes, we're going to have the biggest, we're going to have the baddest, we're going to have the most destructive, the fastest. Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Okay. If you want to see a nuclear-free world, would not it make sense to set an example, to lead by example, and to begin to reduce that arsenal? If your goal, if your stated goal, if your honest goal, your true goal is zero nukes, would not it make sense to begin taking apart the nuclear arsenal? Well, then the Russians will just come and bomb us. So we've got a gun pointed at their head. And they've got a gun pointed at our head. And this is what freedom looks like. It's stunning to me how he can make that kind of a statement, that kind of a contradiction in terms. I just saw the movie Idiocracy. Yeah. I heard about it for years, and I never watched it because I don't watch dumb movies. But watching that, I really felt like, wow, they saw Trump's America coming. They saw it all happening. In the show, the biggest forms of entertainment, the number one show on television is called Ow My Balls. And it really is just a show, an entire show of some guy being repeatedly kicked in his boys. And one of the biggest things that people like is going to monster truck shows and going out to eat fast, and that's it. And there's no reading, there's no intellectuals, there's nothing. It's just dumb. Everybody's a brain dead moron. Dumb. I'm not even sure how they're alive. I'm not sure how their buildings and their cars are just not crumbling around them because they're obviously too stupid to. I mean, it's now. It's a movie about Trump's America. And it's scary because it's what's happening now. And so to have somebody this dumb in charge, I read on Twitter earlier this week, and I forget who tweeted it out. They go, hey, the North Korea thing is bad. It's true. Don't worry about it. We've got our worst people on it.
What specifically have you changed in the nuclear arsenal? And the reason I ask is that a lot of experts yesterday, in response to your tweet, said that modernizing the arsenal takes many years. It can't be done in 6 months. It's a long process that's only just begun.
We've done a lot of modernization, but we've done a lot of renovation. And we have it now in very, very good shape. And it will be in much better shape over the next 6 months to a year.
We've done a lot of modernization and honorization and flagellization and modulization and ebization and all the, as many zations as you can just fit in there. We've done it all. Yeah, it takes years to modernize the arsenal. Years. He did it in 6 months. Also, he defeated ISIS in 30 days.
Military is very important to me. As you know, I did extremely well with the military vote, Mike and I. But my first order was we have to do the military. But before we do the military per se, we're going to do the nuclear. And we are in very strong shape. We're going to be increasing our budget by many billions of dollars because of North Korea and other reasons having to do with the anti-missile. So we are going to be increasing our budget by many billions of dollars. We'll probably be able to report that over the next week. As you know, we reduced it by 5%, but I've decided I don't want that. We're going to be increasing the anti-missiles by a substantial amount of billions of dollars.
Mr. President, can you share with us your latest thoughts on Iran? Speaking of
So it's good to do everything possible to reduce our spending, to reduce our costs. That is, unless you're talking about the military, then enough is never enough. We can always absolutely spend more. Okay, that's enough of the press conference for now. So here are the things that I really, really want to get into. There's a story that came out recently in Raw Story. GOP 101, there's a shocking increase in the percentage of Republicans who think that college is bad for us, college is bad for the U.S. According to a Pew poll, a majority of Republicans and Republican-leaning people believe that higher education is bad for America, and the number has risen 45% since last year. 45%. The poll found that 58% of right-leaning people and 45% of people polled across the political spectrum believe colleges and universities have a negative effect on the country. By contrast, the poll found that 72% of Democrats and left-leaning independents view higher education favorably, a number the report noted hasn't changed much in recent years. In addition to asking about colleges and universities, pollsters also asked more than 2,500 people surveyed about their opinions on the media, and a whopping 85% of Republicans and right-leaning respondents said that they view it negatively. For the first time since 2010, a majority of Republicans and universities say that the Republicans say that universities, higher education, has a negative effect on the United States. Because what you hear on Breitbart is what's really going on. What you hear on Fox News is what's really going on. Idiocracy. There's an article over at the New Yorker by Ed Kilgore. Trump's biggest political asset is supporters who believe that any negative news is fake. It's an entire world of just pick your own reality. In a new poll, it's wild to me that during the Obama administration, there was so much consternation about how Obama's a dictator and we live in a democracy and how dare you, Obama. Obama's a liar. All of these things. And now this guy, and it's measurable, tells something like 8.7 lies a day. A day. Picking their own reality. Picking our reality. But not giving us really any reality. Now that they have somebody that really lies, and now that they have somebody that really wants to be a dictator, so here's the thinking. The headline, in a new poll, half of Republicans would support postponing the 2020 election if Trump proposed it. Critics of the president have repeatedly warned, quoting here, of his potential to undermine American democracy. Among the concerns are his repeated assertions that he would have won the popular vote by 3 to 5 million, or if 3 to 5 million illegals had not voted in the 2016 election, a claim echoed by the head of a White House advisory committee on voter fraud, which is the voter suppression. Claims of large-scale voter fraud are not true, but that has not stopped a substantial number of Republicans from believing them. In a survey, the sample size was 1,325 Americans from June 5th to June 20th. Respondents were recruited from the Qualtrics online panel who had previously reported with identifying with or leaning toward one of the two major parties. We focused on 650 respondents who identify with or lean towards the Republican Party. The sample has been weighed to match the population in terms of sex, age, race, and education. With a series of initial questions, respondents were asked whether Trump won the popular vote, whether millions of illegal immigrants voted, and how often voter fraud occurs. These questions about arguments frequently made by Trump and others about the integrity of the 2016 election. Then the survey asked two questions about postponing the 2020 election. If Donald Trump were to say that the 2020 presidential election should be postponed until the country can make sure that only eligible American citizens can vote, meaning white, that's my part, that's my editorial, meaning white, would you support or oppose postponing the election? The other question, what if both Donald Trump and the Republicans in Congress were to say that the 2020 presidential election should be postponed until the country can make sure that only eligible American citizens vote? Would you support or oppose that election, postponing the election? Nearly half of the Republicans, 47%, believe that Trump won the popular vote. 47%. He did not win the popular vote. He lost by 3 million votes. Larger fractions believe that millions of illegal immigrants voted, 68%, and that voter fraud happened somewhat or very often, 73%. Moreover, 52% said that they would support postponing the 2020 election, and 56% said that they would do it if both, or they would want it if both Trump and the Republicans wanted it. Al Gore won the 2000 election by 500,000 votes. If you don't count the votes that were thrown out, he won by 500,000 votes, so Bush became president. Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes, more than six times, or about six times what Al Gore won by. So Trump got to become president. And now that he's there and he's doing a horrible, awful, no good, very bad job, they don't ever want him to leave. I think there's a belief among conservatives, because they are religious, that if he goes out and gets us all killed, then that's just fine, because we get to go to heaven. We get to be with our Lord and Savior. But what about those of us that don't believe in fairy tales? Those of us that don't believe in magic and don't believe in ghosts, what about us? We don't want that. We'd like to stay here. We'd like to stay here with the planet that we built, that we put so much of our time and effort into, that we work to make beautiful and comfortable. We know that death is the end. But for a lot of these folks, that even though they're not the majority, they get to make the decision, they would very much like us to be killed now so we can go home to heaven. Thank you very much. And in a nod to Idiocracy, Kid Rock announces a Senate run. Don't laugh. We laughed at one Donald Trump. He lost by 3 million votes. Therefore, he's now president. And the Michigan State Republican Party is seriously getting behind a Kid Rock run. Kid Rock is a white supremacist. Kid Rock is from Michigan, which is in the north, but he identifies as a southerner. He carries Confederate flags, full-blown white supremacist. Now, I understand it's going to be pointed out to me, and I'll just get it out there now. Yeah, I understand. He had a black drummer for a while. I don't know a lot about her, but I wouldn't read too much into that because he very openly carried the Confederate flag. And if she stood for that, there's got to be an absolute ignorance with respect to history there. So who are the Democrats talking about running? The Democrats are standing firmly in a circular firing squad right now. And they're ripping each other apart. And they're not thinking about tomorrow. So where's the rest of the world? Where's the middle of the road? Well, then we've got Run the Rock 2020. So we've got Kid Rock. Run the Rock is a group registered with the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, in West Virginia. It's been registered by a gentleman named Kenton Tilford, and he believes that Dwayne the Rock Johnson should become president. So the Rock should become president. Kid Rock should become senator. And what about Chris Rock? I mean, while this is all a joke, what's going on? I mean, while we're just flushing all of it down the toilet, I mean, let's make Kid Rock something. I don't know, Secretary of State. It's insane to me. I talk a lot on this mic, and I've gotten more and more exasperated over the last year. And I always try to bring a solution to this microphone. And today, I'm at an absolute loss for words. What I was going to do, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the show, was I was just going to take, I wasn't going to record a new show. I was just going to take a show from about a year ago, because I've been talking about this for no less than a year. I was going to take a show from a year ago and just re-release it. One of the ones that talks about white supremacy. One of the ones that talks about Richard Spencer. One of the ones that talks about blood and soil. And the reason I was going to do that, because as I mentioned, these shows are written and recorded in such a way that there's history and lessons in them. And you can listen to them at any time and get something out of them. And now, in Virginia, the thing that I have been warning is coming is here.
This is not the first time that we have seen discriminatory responses to historic moments of progress for our nation. We saw it in the Jim Crow laws that followed the Emancipation Proclamation. We saw it in the fierce and widespread resistance to Brown v. Board of Education. And we saw it in the proliferation of state bans on same-sex unions that were intended to stifle any hope that gay and lesbian Americans might one day be afforded the right to marry. And that right, of course, is now recognized as a guarantee embedded in our Constitution. And in the wake of that historic triumph, we have seen bill after bill in state after state, taking aim at the LGBT community. Let me speak now directly to the people of the great state, the beautiful state, my home state of North Carolina. You have been told that this law protects vulnerable populations from harm, but that is just not the case. Instead, what this law does is inflict further indignity on a population that has already suffered far more than its fair share. This law provides no benefit to society, and all it does is harm innocent Americans. Let us reflect on the obvious but often neglected lesson that state-sanctioned discrimination never looks good and never works in hindsight. It was not so very long ago that states, including North Carolina, had other signs above restrooms, water fountains, and on public accommodations, keeping people out based on a distinction without a difference.
Boy, that was a better time back when we had the head of the Justice Department looking out for people and not looking out for discrimination. So here's what's happening right now in Virginia. Starting last night, and this has happened one other time this year, but it wasn't this violent. So in Virginia, white supremacists, Trump supporters, with their Make America Great Again hats are chanting, marching in the streets and chanting. They did this last night with torches. They were chanting that they're not going to be replaced, that they're not going to be replaced by Jews, and they're chanting blood and soil. Blood and soil is an old Nazi reference, quoting here from history learning.uk. Blood and soil, Blut und Boden, was a very important philosophy for Nazi Germany. The issue of blood and soil nearly split the Nazi Party after 1925 and resolved at the Bamberg Conference of 26. One side of the Nazi Party wanted to emphasize the relationship between true Aryans and rural life. Hitler believed that Germans came from the soil, that they had family background based on farming and life in the countryside. However, men like Gregor and Otto Strasser wanted to move the party away from the belief in Blut und Boden and move towards a policy of attracting more support in urban areas. The Strasser brothers were defeated on this issue, and Hitler rallied his supporters around Blut und Boden, blood and soil, while Otto Strasser left to form his own party based outside of Germany. Gregor was murdered on the night of long knives. Hitler wanted all Germans to identify themselves with a glorious historic past based on descendants who worked off the land, blood and soil. There was an element of romanticism associated with this belief, as it failed to take into account the importance of industry and the rise of Imperial Germany in the late 19th century and early 20th century. However, Hitler associated industry with socialism, communism, and trade unions, even if he was to court the support and money of industrialists in later years. Belief in blood and soil. Blood and soil. The white supremacists are marching in Virginia right now, chanting blood and soil. So there's those guys, but there's also a counter-protest. And as I'm recording right now in my studio, it's coming off of the news wires. This, according to AP, vehicle plows into a group of counter-protesters at a white nationalist rally in Virginia. Injuries unknown. So here's what we're looking at. ISIS has said in countries that are not America, because in America, guns are really easy to get. They said in America, get as many guns as you can and kill as many people as you can. But in other countries, try to get things like planes and cars. Cars are the easiest thing to get in just about any country. So ISIS says, take a car and use it to mow down as many people as possible. So the Trump supporters, the white supremacists in Virginia at this hour, have went ahead and decided to use one of ISIS starring tactics, and that is to get in a car and to drive over the people that you wish to kill, which in this case is the counter-protesters, the Antifa, the people that are rallying against the white supremacists have just been driven over. I'm sure there's multiple injuries, and I have no doubt that some of them are going to die. A state of emergency has been declared by the governor of Virginia. So this went on all Friday night the 11th. And I'm taping today on the 12th. And it's going on right now. And it's absolutely insane that this is happening. I've been talking about the rise of the white supremacist movement for some time. And how it's being facilitated. It's being fed by the United States Republican Party. And we still refuse to identify the United States Republican Party as a hate group. I'm looking at you, Southern Poverty Law Center. Though this is what's going on right now. Once I turn off this microphone in a couple of minutes, I've got a wedding to be at. I'm going to make people happy, and I'm going to talk with little kids. And I love talking with little kids. You know, future of the world, future of America. And I'm going to make older people dance to some of their older people music, and I'm going to insert some of that younger people Randy type music that gets them going, you know, with the swears and the sexual innuendos, and I'm going to have a good time. And usually heading into, you know, sort of doing stuff throughout the day before I head off to these weddings, I'm usually in an absolute chipper mood, doing a little bit of work and talking with my wife and with my babies. And then I go out and I make a bunch of people happy, and I love it. And what a fantastic thing. And today I woke up and there's the headlines. White supremacists all night marching, marching, marching. Blood and soil marching, marching, marching. We're not going to be replaced by Jews. We're not, like, you know, make America great again. White supremacy, white supremacy, whites are all over the place. And it has absolutely destroyed me this morning. Now, I don't know how many people are out there, how many people are within the sound of my voice, but I want you to understand this. I wish that I were in Virginia right now. I would be marching, and I would be one of the loudest, and I would be one of the most powerful protesters there during Hitler's reign in Germany. And I take a lot of crap for the comparisons that I have made, that I have seen with the Trump administration and Trump supporters and Nazis in the last year. But today I have been proven correct. In Nazi Germany, there were a group of people who went about their lives despite the mass slaughter and genocide that was going on. And when the whole thing was over, they simply said, I had nothing to do with it. I was merely being a good German. So to you, to the people within the sound of my voice, if you're listening across the world, this is what's happening in America. If you're listening in America, what are you going to do? Are you going to stand up to these people? Are you going to get out there and march with the marchers? Are you going to stand with Muslims and Jewish people and women and Asians and African Americans and Latin Americans? Are you going to stand with them? Or are you merely going to stay home, watch TV, go to work, come home, eat, take a dump, have a beer, sleep, and go do it all again and merely be a good German? Whenever we learned about the awful things that happened with respect to history in class, you know, grade school and middle school and high school and college, whenever we heard about those awful things that were happening back then, we all turned to one another and we go, why didn't people do anything? What were people doing at that time? Hey, if I were there during that time, you know what I would have been doing? Stop. Stop right there. You are here. And it's that time. And that thing, that injustice that you were complaining about happening, it's happening right now. So I ask you this. What are you doing? What are you going to do? You said it. You said it when you were in school. You had the chance. Given the opportunity. If that horrible historic injustice was happening, what would you do? Now is the time. What are you doing? What are you going to do? Now is that point in history. What are you going to do? Don't pray. Don't send thoughts and prayers. Don't send good words. Get out there and march with the marchers, because it needs to happen. You're now a part of history, and you'll be able to say to your kids and your grandkids, they'll say, what were you doing when the Nazis were marching through Virginia? And you can say, I was there, or I did this to offer support, or, you know, I know recording a radio show isn't necessarily going to change anything. Actually, it's definitely not going to change anything. But if I can inspire one of you, just one of you to get out there and fight against this neo-Nazi American movement. All right, this Trump supporter, these Trump supporters. If I can get one of you to get out there and do something, to join me in this fight, then that will absolutely make it worth it for me. One inspires another and another and another. All right, I got to go. I got a bunch of people to make happy. For the rest of the month, I will try to be here as often as I can. Work is absolutely insane, but I'm staying on top of this news. And I want to stay on top of it with you, because this isn't just happening to me. It's not just happening in my country. It's not just happening to my countrymen. It's happening to all of us. When one of us is oppressed, we're all oppressed. And the white supremacist movement needs to be stomped out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store, at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There, you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, send them to me, tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. Feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. I am flustered by these damn white supremacists. Sorry. Rejecting austerity. Favor of prosperity. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening, my comrade Kevin. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.